So we are beginning a new series today called Stories of Triumph. And in it, we are featuring stories of our congregants. And today we have Sarah Hood and Christine Sharmer, who are sharing their amazing inspirational stories with us. So I will be reading with them and invite you to sit back and open your heart, because it will be opened anyway, even if you choose not to. Enjoy.
Hi, I'm Christine Sharmer, and this is my story.
I have two beautiful grown sons, Miguel and Mario.
After my husband Mark and I raised them, we raised Mario again.
Our sweet angels were also wild teenagers who loved to party.
When Mario was 16, he punched another kid, and that was the final straw. He was sent to the boys' farm for 6 months.
Afterwards, he chose to live with his birth dad.
Mario is really handsome and did some modeling. He loved girls and the girls loved him.
After he graduated, he moved back home with plans for a summer of fun.
Then the boys would be moving out together and attending massage therapy school.
I had just turned 50 and was really looking forward to that empty nest.
But all of our plans came to a screeching halt on the night of August 8th.
Let's take a look at this video to see what happened.
You are the face of God. I hold you in my heart. You are a part of me. You are the face of God. You are the face of God. I hold you in my heart. You are a part of me. You are the face of God. You are the face of God.
Tu es l'image de Dieu.
I hold you in my heart.
Tu es l'image de l'amour.
You are a part of me. You are the face of God. You are the face of God.
Mario was perched on that delicate fence between life and death.
I kept calling him back, and I would not let him go.
He later told me, when I died, three angels came for me.
One had long white hair and shined like a beautiful lady. Her name was Naomi.
The second was a bald man, all in white.
And the third was pure light.
Meanwhile,
the angels wanted me to go with them, but I felt my mom's love, and I wanted to return to my body.
Meanwhile, I kept calling him back. Had I stopped calling, I believe he would not have come back.
He says, I came back for my mom. She and I are one.
I was so happy he came back. And then at the same time, I was thinking,
oh my God, what have I signed up for?
The first 72 hours in ICU were harrowing.
I had to find a way to pull myself together.
After I would visit Mario, I would go and play my Native American flute in the hospital chapel.
As I played, my heart went out to all the mothers of the world.
I felt the heartbreaking pain of mothers who had lost a child and would play until my nose ran and my face was wet with tears.
The doctors told us Mario's brain injury was so severe, if he did recover, it would be like starting over like a suckling baby.
We would have to teach him to walk, talk, and use the toilet again.
There was a lot to Mario's claim that he and I are one.
When I was 18, the same age as Mario at the time of his accident and near-death experience, I was having panic attacks from taking LSD.
My mother took me to a neighborhood meditation group. I wanted a guru like some of her friends, but none of them appealed to me.
Then I saw a picture of Sai Baba, and I knew he was the one. I became a Sai Baba devotee.
When I was in my 20s, my mom took me to India for a personal interview with Sai Baba. He told me that I was on the path of seva, sacred service.
And what an opportunity I had to walk that path now with my newly born 18-year-old son.
Mario was very spiritual, even at 8 years old. He would love getting in the circle and being blessed at Unity's healing nights.
We were both going to need those spiritual practices now.
And we could not act alone. I knew community was essential.
I had a large poster of Mario, and entire congregations were praying for him, Catholics, Protestants, Hindus, and Jews.
I believe it was this powerful love force that kept Mario on the earth plane.
Kitty Corner, from where the accident happened, was the Life Knowledge Center run by Nancy Fitzgerald, who channeled angels.
Nancy channeled angelic messages that Mario would fully recover.
I hung on to that.
And I had my own encounters with angels too, like Nurse Anne. She told us not to listen to the doctor's dire predictions and to never give up hope.
I was determined to see his recovery through.
I'm a school teacher, and I can be very linear, efficient, and organized. These skills kicked in.
My husband Mark and I would study the monitors when Mario had visitors or he experienced different sensations.
We repeated the visits and patterns that showed calm responses and avoided agitating experiences so his brain could heal.
Later, we sought to slightly stimulate his brain and see what kind of responses would engage his brain.
I brought aromatherapy, oils to stimulate his sense of smell and taste.
He responded very positively to the feel of soft fabrics and feathers and softly playing music.
We posted pictures of him in his room so the medical staff could interact and see Mario as a real person beyond all those tubes and machines.
On his 19th birthday, he opened his eyes. What a gift.
That quickly turned into a nightmare. I thought he had come back only to discover he was in a persistent vegetative state.
Some of Mario's girlfriends showed up. One of them even claimed to be his sister so she would get to see him.
These girls were a godsend, especially Gina and Nikki, who joined his therapy team and always helped when he was moved, which was a lot.
Every time I came into the room and he was missing, my heart dropped, thinking the worst.
Despite the hopeless attitude of the hospital staff, we persisted in our plans for Mario's recovery.
I made a schedule with detailed exercises for visitors to perform.
We kept a collective journal. Each person who came to help recorded what they did and how Mario responded.
After 141 days in hospitals, nursing homes, and rehabilitation, Mario came home as a quadriplegic with a food tube and 36 pills a day.
It was really a trying time to adjust to all of his needs at home.
Looking back, it's hard to imagine how we dealt with feeding tubes, a Hoyer lift, vomiting, diapers, rolling Mario over every 2 to 4 hours so he wouldn't get bed sores.
I was still working full-time as a teacher. But at 55, I quit because I had a calling to write the book, Raising Mario Twice.
I was grateful for Sola, the pit bull puppy, who rescued us and would kiss Mario out of his fits.
Our Unity community was really helpful over the years.
Sherry Miller, one of our members, engaged Mario in speech therapy for 4 years.
Kelly Gale taught yoga to Mario on the lawn out here for free for many years and still works with him to this day.
Kelly recovered from a brain tumor when she was in her 30s, and she cries every time she's with Mario.
Videos of Mario were made by Sherry Dyer, Jack Nichols, and a website was created by John Nichols.
In the beginning, I was hesitant to bring Mario to church because I didn't know how he would be.
Then I came on a Sunday in 2009, and Reverend David told his story about forgiveness and how his wife had been murdered.
We started coming every Sunday after that.
Mario made connections with Reverend Sheila's daughter, Sion, and her boyfriend, Sonny.
It had been on my mind to get Mario some art support when I walked into Unity on a Sunday one afternoon.
David Brooks came right up to me and said, "Would Mario like to paint?"
I just stood there shocked and said, "Wow."
David said that it had come to him in a meditation to ask Mario to do art with him.
From that day forward, David is Mario's art teacher.
Mario now has over 100 paintings and has won awards through the Contra Costa County.
It's one of the ways that Mario spreads his love, making art and sharing it with the public.
And as anyone who knows Mario will attest, he blows kisses and says, "I love you," to everyone he meets.
Love, hope, faith. That's really what got us through.
And humor. Humor is huge. Keeping Mario light works a lot of the time.
Mario has a toe that sticks up all the time, so we named it the Snooty Toe.
Now we joke about Mario being called a vegetable at one time. What kind of vegetable are you, Mario? A carrot? A zucchini?
No, 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 he says. I'm celery.
He's also like a stick of dynamite. He can just snap and have a complete meltdown.
It's been 15 years since Mario's life changed dramatically.
He's 33 now, and he can communicate verbally some of the time.
He lives in his own apartment with fairly constant caregiver assistance.
He doesn't like violent movies. He's all about peace and love, so we respect his space and ensure his home reflects him.
Mario blesses everything he eats with love and gratitude, and he even blows kisses to the toilet to thank it for its service.
We play Om CDs in his apartment all day long.
He's now with me every Thursday afternoon and Friday morning.
And I'm happy to say I have a team of 13 caregivers for Mario and for my mom.
We found our caregivers through prayer and word of mouth.
Half of them are in recovery.
It's become an extension of Mark and my service to give people jobs who are otherwise unemployable.
One day recently, I was exhausted. Leaving Mario, I was leaving Unity Church and headed home for a much-needed nap.
A new guy was doing some yard work for Mark, and he didn't have a place to live.
I'm not having him live in my house, I thought.
But what do you do with someone who needs a home?
I wondered, if he could live with my mom and mom's live-in caregiver, Jenny.
When I got home, the guy was in the back weeding and crying because he had no place to go.
"All right," I said, "you can move in with my mom on a trial basis. If you get along with her and stay clean and sober, then you can stay."
My mom's response was, "Who's this strange man in my house? I don't want him living here."
But within 2 days, Mom was declaring her love for him, and he has even taught her to meditate 30 minutes a day.
Jenny likes having him there because my mom doesn't follow her around the house as much.
Mario has given me a great means of service and connection with people.
I've also taken to preaching to those caregivers.
I say, look, if you want to be happy and balanced, you have got to meditate. You can call it walking meditation, prayer, sitting in a tree. It works.
Meditation has saved me.
I didn't panic when Mario's caregiver, Chris, called in sick.
I used to panic. I don't even say, ugh, anymore. And of course it worked out. John started and Jenny was available.
I've learned if you release the fear and trust, life can be magical.
there's always some angel to help.
You don't know what's going to happen in life. If you step out of the way, Spirit takes care.
The one thing you can control is your attitude.
I've learned to be in the eye of the storm. I meditate, eat well, exercise, and always ask for help.
If I need a time out, I put my headphones on and listen to a meditation.
Recently, Mario's yoga teacher, Kelly, rebirthed the idea of making a documentary movie of his life.
Through her connections, we made a short starter video.
We have a fundraiser and art show planned for September 16th and a GoFundMe campaign for the full documentary.
For years, I hung on to that angel's promise of Mario's full recovery.
But what is recovery? My son is perfect, just the way he is. I don't try to change him anymore.
I will always be a significant part of Mario's life. Let that sink in, Mario.
I can't change him anyhow, so what's the point?
I will always be a significant part of Mario's life, but I don't want to be his caregiver anymore. I'm getting better and better at setting that boundary all the time.
Mario assures me that I am never alone, and he is never alone. He says, I see you every time I look in the mirror. You and I are one. I love you. I'm here to heal the world with you.
And we keep evolving.
I want to share this wisdom that I've gained and go as far as I can with this body.
Mario says he's going to stay here until the whole world is in love.
Together, we are a mighty force to heal this world.
Mario and I are definitely not alone, and we aren't done yet.
Let's bless Christine and Mario.
I'm going to walk down.
You are a part of me. You are the face of God.
Sing that again. You are the face.
You are the face of God.
I hold you in my heart.
I hold you in my heart.
You are a part of me.
You are a part of me.
You are the face.
You are the face of God.
You are the face of love.
You are the face of love.
I hold you in my heart.
I hold you in my heart.
You are my family.
You are my family.
You are the face.
You are the face of love.
Just that last line, you're the face of love.
You are the face of love.
You are the face of God.
You are the face of God.
One more time.
You are the face of God.
No. Stay right there in your hearts because there's another one coming.
I'm Sarah, and this is my story.
My kids have been to more funerals than weddings.
I've been hospitalized in mental wards, performed emergency CPR on my closest loved ones, and, at times,
I've contemplated suicide.
Let me explain.
It was 1998 on a freeway on-ramp when my then-boyfriend, Quan, and I discovered that we both wanted twins and a singleton.
We had met at the Flamingo Hilton in Reno, and things were going well, but it was that on-ramp discovery that sealed the deal.
We couldn't figure out how to have a wedding with our two cultures and families.
Thai and Laos weddings last a weekend and involve 3 to 4 dresses. My culture dictated 1 dress a day.
His family didn't approve of our racially mixed marriage.
My family wished he had a more educated and less poverty-stricken background.
So we eloped at Lake Tahoe.
Our dreams of the twins and singleton were waylaid when we found out we couldn't get pregnant.
Shortly afterwards, a nurse handed me a fertility prescription and said,
"Don't expect to get pregnant."
Despite her sentiments, we celebrated our first year anniversary with joyful news. We were pregnant!
With triplets.
Triplet pregnancy often wavers between life and death.
The concern is going into premature labor, which I did several times.
20 weeks in, I had emergency surgery so that my babies could survive and stay in the womb long enough to develop.
I also had gestational diabetes.
After a lot of prodding and poking, it felt as if my body was not mine anymore, like it was the property of the medical system.
But my babies made it.
11 weeks early, each weighing in at 2 pounds.
Charlie, Emily, and Linnea arrived and were promptly put on life support.
Soon they would come home, which was a rental condo in horrible condition.
My mom scrambled to find us a better home in Reno, and we moved in the day Charlie and Emily came home.
Linnea stayed behind. Her little body was racked with everything imaginable, sepsis, strep, and staph infections.
It was a hard 10 days without Linnea.
I was recovering from a C-section while pumping and freezing milk.
Quan would go back to California to see Linnea and bring my breast milk.
When it was time to collect 5-pound Linnea, we had to take a long detour around a burning wildfire.
Finally, we arrived, and joyfully, we brought our third child back to her new home.
But another stressor was closing in.
While the move was a good one, it had cost us our health insurance.
Linnea needed to be on oxygen, and we were feeling desperate.
Gratefully, we found a place that would donate oxygen until the medical insurance kicked in.
Juan was hired at the Flamingo Hilton, and things were looking up.
In a few months, our babies graduated from their laundry baskets and were put in cribs gifted from my aunt.
And Quan and I gladly abandoned our blow-up mattress on the floor for a real bed.
Quan wanted to bring home more money for our new family, so he began to gamble.
Gamble away his entire paycheck, that is.
When he didn't come home, I would have him paged at hotel casinos and call hospitals and jails trying to find him.
In the morning, he'd slink in sheepishly, having gambled all night.
My mom was paying our rent, and I was living on the Social Security check we received for the triplets.
Quan's gambling became severe, and I finally told my mom.
She set out to find a place where she could pay the living expenses for the whole entire family.
While I was grateful, the place Mom could afford had really ugly orange countertops, no dishwasher or air conditioning, and had a big black widow infestation inside and out.
We were moving anyway, but my mom wasn't packing.
And she has a lot of stuff.
The triplets were 2 years old. Emily was nonverbal and not walking yet, so I took her to therapy 3 times a week.
I couldn't deal with it all. In the midst of overwhelm, I began to have suicidal ideations.
But they passed, and we finished moving, and Quan and I separated.
A year later, things were looking up.
Emily finally started walking at the age of 3.
Juan had stopped gambling for 6 months, and we were getting back together.
I became a half-time student with a part-time job at the University of Nevada, Reno, where we were granted good, inexpensive childcare.
And just 2 months later, days before Quan was to move back home, Linnea came toddling into my room and woke me up.
I looked at the clock and panicked. It was 8:30.
Emily always woke up exactly at 6:38. I pushed past Linnea, thinking someone had taken Emily.
A flood of relief came over me when I saw she was still there.
She was lying face down, and when I picked her up, her body was stiff and cold. Her face was white from her forehead to her chin.
My CPR training kicked in, and I breathed into her mouth and saw her chest rise and fall.
I was so relieved. She was breathing.
Then I looked up at the firefighter standing in the door. He was going like this. I realized it was only my breath leaving her body.
The tragedy of my baby's death by seizure instantly became a crime scene.
They took pictures. They took her bedding and her jammies.
They took her body because they had to have her eyes, brain, and spinal cord to rule out child abuse.
Kindness soothed my shock when I saw a policeman putting the milk back in the refrigerator after pouring it for the other two kids' cereal.
What would I tell Emily's siblings? I happened to be working in the Human Development and Family Studies at the university, and I followed their recommendations.
Children need concrete information, so I told them Emily's breathing stopped and her heart stopped too.
And they needed to see their sister. When we walked into the mortuary, 3-year-old Linnea asked, "Is this heaven?"
Shortly after Emily died, I desperately wanted to be with her. Who would take care of her? I reasoned Quan could take care of the other two if I left to be with Emily.
I imagined driving my car underneath semis and having great explosions.
And then it dawned on me, if anyone could be a better parent to my child, it would be God.
I could live with that, even though I still entertained an exit now and then.
But I didn't really want to die. I just needed help. When I went to the hospital, they would ask repeatedly, "Are you suicidal?"
The last time the woman held my gaze until I realized yes was what I was supposed to say.
In 2004, I was checked in. They took out my shoelaces. It was like jail and hospital, but I didn't care. I slept.
I slept a lot.
After I was released, we moved to California where Quan had a new job and we had a fresh start.
We wanted another child, and in March 2006, Maddie was born.
I went back to work and, to my great surprise, became pregnant again with Abby.
She was 100% organic.
But at 7 weeks old, something wasn't right. The doctors suggested that we take Abby to Stanford, where they told us she had a heart defect and her right lung was not attached.
Just then I remembered a horrifying dream where I had picked up my new baby and she had a box coming out of the right side of her back.
We all went to live with Abby at the George Marx Children's House for terminally ill children and their families.
It is the most remarkable, compassionate place you could imagine. And to kids, it's like they're going to Disneyland.
One night while there, I saw a glimpse of a young girl in a white floor-length gown. She was about 8, the same age as Charlie and Linnea.
A friend suggested it was Emily in angel form. I wept, knowing it wouldn't be long for Abby.
Her angelic older sister Emily had come to take her to the other side.
Soon I was repeating, "Mommy loves you," as Abby made her transition.
Later, while I was in a hydrotherapy session, Emily appeared in the upper corner of the room holding Abby. She told me I was a good mom.
And thus began my conscious communication with angels.
Although earthly life wasn't easy by any stretch, I was healing.
Quan was stuck in his old patterns. When he started selling pot from our apartment, that was it. I was done. We divorced.
I'm third generation New Thought. When I had the triplets, I drifted away.
It felt like a breach of faith when my two children died.
I still believed, but I was really mad at God.
The why question plagued me. Why did I have to lose two children?
A minister suggested that these two souls chose me for all of our souls' growth.
That was a profoundly positive take on such negative events. It was a reason my brain could understand and a privilege my heart could feel.
Death has a reason.
When you look at the bigger picture, in terms of multi-lifetimes and growth, soul growth, it's easier to understand.
In 2014, I met John. I knew from the first date that he was the one. We were twin flames.
He was deeply spiritual. We exchanged energy work, and he talked to angels, too.
2 days after John's birthday, and 1 day after mine, I woke to him groaning as he came up the stairs at 3 a.m.
As he passed out, I guided him to the floor, and then I shook him and yelled, "We just met! Don't do this!"
"I love you, John," I said as the paramedics whisked him to the ER.
There's a certain energy resonance to terror, and I was experiencing it as a nurse led me down the hallway of the hospital.
And then I heard a voice from within say, "You've had two children die. If he's really gone, you can do this."
The doctor was explaining that John died of a widowmaker heart attack. I was so angry, I wanted to beat the doctor.
And then an angel in full form with bright white wings down to the floor appeared. It was John.
"It's even better over here than I thought," he said.
From then on, I had conversations with him whenever I wanted. The relationship had changed, but he wasn't gone.
We talked all the time. When I was ready to date again, I discussed it with John. I signed up for spiritual singles online, and 5 days later, I met Glenn.
Glenn is so much like John, it's crazy. He's techie, he's spiritual, he does energy work, and he even likes geology.
By then, I had a grounding habit that I call my angel handshake. And during that first date with Glenn, I greeted my four angels.
There was sweet, smiling Abby.
And Doc Benny, my guardian angel who had revealed himself in a workshop.
My daughter Emily said, "I love you, Mommy."
And John, who put his hands around me and said, "I'm not supposed to be your attention right now. He is."
As he turned me to face Glenn.
When Glenn and I did a healing together, he said, "You have four angels here."
And I said to myself, "This guy is good."
One day I was driving and heard, "Look left."
The street sign said, "John Glenn Drive."
I followed the signs. Since then, Charlie, Linnea, Maddie, Glenn, and I have made a new home together.
We have a great relationship and enjoy this spiritual community as family. The kids love Youth of Unity.
Through death, I've learned to consciously choose love over hate.
Reverend David once told me that you don't ever have to stop loving.
And I felt relieved. I don't ever want to stop loving.
I keep an eye out for spontaneous fun, too, because I know how special these opportunities are.
I'm a certified grief recovery specialist now, and I'm putting the finishing touches on my book, Trust Me, Death Has a Reason.
I want to inspire people and let them know that life can go on after tragedy.
In fact, it's remarkable just how good life can be.
You are the face of God. I hold you in my heart. You are a part of me. You are the face of God.
Sing that with us.
You are the face of God.
I hold you in my heart.
I hold you in my heart.
You are a part of me.
You are a part of me.
You are the face of God.
You are the face of God.
You are the face of love.
You are the face of love.
Hold you in my heart.
I hold you.
You are the face of love.
You are the face of God.
You are the face of God.
Last time.
You are the face of God.
Thank you doesn't seem adequate for you two amazing women. We are honored by your stories and your presence in our community. Thank you.